entertained? Are you not entertained? Is this not why you are here?
Louis Mercedes, your host of AYNE, is back. Are you not entertained? Marvel Retrospect, entry number 2, The Incredible Hulk, which was released 1 month after Iron Man in 2008, directed by Louis Leterrier, who knows a thing or two about action because he directed the star-making franchise of The Transporter for Jason Statham, that is. And I have a lot to say about The Incredible Hulk, and I'm definitely going to need Quixote and D'Angelo to join me and give their opinion and shed some light on what they thought about The Incredible Hulk and Edward Norton's subsequent departure from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and how this film should have had a much bigger impact on the MCU than it did, but it didn't. So all that and then some. But I just wanted to mention, this is a very exciting time to be a nerd like myself, because we're a few days away from WrestleMania weekend, which means you got the Hall of Fame ceremony, headlined by Goldberg being inducted. You got NXT TakeOver New Orleans this Saturday night. And then you have the showcase of the Immortals, WrestleMania 34. So pretty exciting. Oh, and then you also have the Raw after WrestleMania next Monday, which is just as epic and just as historic as the WrestleMania pay-per-view itself, as recent years have proved. But anyway, it is a wonderful time to be a nerd, because not only is it WrestleMania weekend, we are 4 weekends away from Avengers Infinity War. Fantastic. And we're also about a month and a half away from Deadpool 2, some 7 weeks away from Solo, A Star Wars Story. So lots of exciting nerdgasms to come. And without further ado, we're going to get into The Incredible Hulk, 2008, directed by Louis Leterrier.
Hello?
Yo, what's up, Quixote?
What's going on, brother? What's going on?
All I'm going to say is I apologize for my late timing.
It's all good, man. It's all good.
For all the listeners, there's a 1 hour time difference. So, like, when I'm ready to record at 10 o'clock, 10:30, these man are just – they're staying up at, like, 11-ish
yeah.
and change.
Yeah, man. We're in it for the long call.
I appreciate it.
Long call, man. We're in it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. What's up, D?
What's good?
Oh, was he signed off again?
I think he just got signed off.
Anchor is just relentless.
Yeah, Anchor is no holds barred with Anchor, man.
They're like, yeah, we'll have him connect and then we'll just boot him off.
Oh, man.
Before we get into it, let me get some quick thoughts on Ready Player One and whatever you've seen recently. You know, I'm always
You know, Ready Player One, I thought was pretty good. To me, I think I needed more of the references. I wanted more of that. Like, you got a good amount of it in the beginning of the film. Right in the middle, there's a special spoiler alert. Did you see it, by the way, before?
No, I haven't seen it.
Okay, so I don't want to give anything away. But there's a really cool cameo. I want to know if you can point it out when you go see it. But a really cool, Easter egg cameo that they put in there. That I thought was pretty cool. But you got a lot of it in the beginning of the film. You got, you know, the T-Rex from Jurassic Park and all that good stuff.
Oh, nice.
Steven Spielberg, you know, once again makes really crisp looking films. Like it looks like it's effortless. You know what I'm saying? Like it just looks good. It flows well. And I thought it was fun. I thought it was a fun film. It didn't knock me off my seat. Definitely not my favorite Spielberg film, but definitely good. It was good. I did enjoy it.
Yeah, it's on my list. What's up, D? You got disconnected before.
Yo, can you hear me?
Yeah, yeah, we can hear you loud and clear.
What's going on, D?
What's going on, Kyote? How's it hanging?
Good, man. Everything's good. Everything's good.
Always nice to hear that.
Yeah, before you reconnected, Kyote was just giving his quick thoughts on Ready Player One. I haven't seen Ready Player One. I mean, I'm always behind on my movies these days. Yeah. Yeah, I just wanted to hear his quick thoughts. Did you see it, by the way?
What film? Ready Player One?
Yeah.
No, I haven't seen it yet, but it's on my list of movies to see. Like, I have a movie pass, so I have no excuse not to go see these movies.
Yes.
It's on my list.
You know, I'm going to give a really big fuck you to everyone who has a movie pass because they don't have a family plan yet.
No, they don't.
Yeah, well, anyway, good for you guys, all right? Good for you guys for enjoying as many movies as you want for $10.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Yeah.
The only way to see movies now, man, I can't go back to paying like I normally do. I can't.
You know what? And I totally don't blame you because living here in Texas has definitely spoiled me. Mm. Whereas, you know, I used to pay – give or take for one IMAX ticket on a big IMAX on a good IMAX screen, like $25. I don't know what it is now. Maybe D could comment on that. But
about 26, 27 now, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, that's outrageous because I can get an IMAX ticket here for about $14.
Wow. That's a normal ticket here.
Exactly.
And if I go to a matinee, Karen and I went to a matinee not too long. Oh, it was for Black Panther. There you go. We went to the matinee showing, and both tickets came out to like – it was just peanuts. It was like somewhere between $15 and $20, something like that.
Wow. That's insane. That's insane, man.
Wow.
Yeah, so I'm spoiled. So I kind of see what you're saying, how – well, I'm not just hearing it from YouTube, but other people as well, that they can never go back to paying regular price for a movie. If you have movie pass, it's like, you know –
That's
everything you need, pretty much.
Greatest thing ever created, man.
Great. And pretty much, like, even if you don't use it, like, every day.
Something's wrong with the app.
Can't hold us down. Can't hold us down, Lewis.
That's right. They cannot hold us down. I don't care how many times they boot us from the connection and.
Oh man,
this is getting rather ridiculous. I'm gonna let Dean finish his point with MoviePass because that's just wrong, man.
Yeah.
I'm gonna let him finish his point and then we can get into the topic of discussion.
Let's do it.
But yeah, MoviePass is a beautiful thing, man. I can't wait until they start expanding the options for family plans and all that stuff.
It's going to happen. I was
signing up for it, but because it's only individual plans, it wouldn't make sense for my situation.
Right. Now, is your son free when he sees the movie?
Nah.
Oh, okay.
Nah, he ain't free. He's well past it. He just turned 4, so, you know, he's...
He's an adult.
He's practically an adult.
Okay.
Finish up your point with MoviePass. You were saying how, like, even though you don't use it, even if you don't use it every day.
Yeah, like, what it takes is watching one movie, and you pretty much it works out. You pay $10 a month, you watch one movie, you know, that's what, $14, $15. So you basically, it's worth it.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. I can't wait until they expand their options and I sign up for it.
Yeah, man.
But without further ado, let's talk about the awkward stepbrother of the MCU, which is the Incredible Hulk.
That's a pretty good way to say it. That's pretty accurate.
Pretty spot. And you know why I say it's the awkward stepbrother, stepchild, whatever you want to call it, because when people think of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, they're mostly thinking of the Iron Man movies, the Captain America movies, even the Thor movies,
yeah,
the Guardians of the Galaxy, whatever. you're not really thinking about the Incredible Hulk all that much. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Hulk was recast once again,
right,
with Mark Ruffalo. So it's just one of those films that like always gets overlooked, for better or for worse, because not everybody feels the same way about it. Mm-hmm. You know, my initial reaction to The Incredible Hulk when I first saw it was, this is an entertaining movie.
Right.
It is. I'm not going to deny it. But it didn't leave me it didn't sweep me off my feet. And I didn't love it. You know, like, I enjoyed it mildly, but I didn't love it.
Okay.
What were your initial thoughts, guys, on Incredible Hulk when it first came out?
What do you think, D?
Yeah, sure. I'll start it off. Yeah, I mean, I agree with Lewis. It's a very fair assessment of, you know, my feelings towards the film as well. Like, it was entertaining. You know, it was cool seeing the Hulk. He finally appears on screen when he Hulks out. You know, some of the iconic things, like, you know, the hearing the Hulk smash and all of that was cool.
Yeah.
But it didn't really do nothing for me, like, in that way. I left the movie theater saying, well, that's good. You know, better than, you know, Ang Lee's version, in my opinion. But that's okay.
Oh, we're going to get to that.
Yeah.
You know, man, I'm not going to lie. I really liked it. I really liked it. I liked it for a lot of reasons. I liked it because it wasn't Ang Lee's Hulk.
Oh, my God.
I liked it because I like Edward Norton, and I thought he was actually decent. I think he's not Mark Ruffalo now, but I accepted him because I had no Mark Ruffalo at the time. So he was I thought he did just as good as a job as he could with the situation at hand, as far as possibly not being the Hulk moving forward. So I thought he handled it well. I think effects wise, and if we talk in technical, like how it was shot, how it looked, I didn't hate it. I did hate Abomination. I wasn't too crazy about that, but the film as a whole, I did enjoy it, man. I did enjoy it. Not gonna lie, not my top five, but in the MCU, but I definitely enjoyed it.
Yeah, when I revisited it last week. When I revisited it, that was my third time watching it, and you know what? It was probably my most enjoyable experience watching it, just for the fact that a decade has passed. I watched it a couple of times before. So now my expectations obviously are completely subdued, and I'm not going to be as critical with certain things. And you know what? I really enjoyed it this time around. But before I get into this version of Hulk, Ang Lee's 2003 version, right? You guys already affirmed what I was having a conversation with D'Angelo about a couple of days ago. You guys just basically affirmed how I'm in the minority of people that actually liked and enjoyed Ang Lee's Hulk. I did. I'm one of the people, even in college, man, back in Purchase, I would always fucking argue, and like, people want to crucify me for liking that 2003 version. Here's my take on that version of Hulk.
Yeah.
I thought it was a little ahead of its time. And when I say ahead of its time, I mean it was a little too heady for a comic book adaptation / superhero movie for 2003.
Right.
This is coming fresh off of the success of Spider-Man and two gigantic X-Men movies. And, you know, this is when Marvel adaptations were starting to become very popular and they were getting greenlit left and right. So when you heard about a Hulk film and what the general audience expected from a Hulk film at that time was Hulk smash, that kind of stuff, you know, just straight destruction and action, where Ang Lee's approach was more about really, really dense character development. The characterization in that film is extremely heavy, and it's not. It requires a lot of patience. It's not one of those superhero movies that you can just easily get into. It does require patience. But I like that approach. Maybe I was just mature in that regard because this came out when I was, 14? So I really appreciated that approach. Now, I could care less about the storyline with his father towards the end. I thought the third act just completely fell flat to me. But I think it turned a lot of people off when it took 45 minutes for us to actually see Eric Bana turn into the Hulk. And it turned a lot of people off. But I thought the CGI was very good for its time. I thought the action sequences, especially when he's fighting the dogs, that was a memorable scene. And when he's fighting the military, I liked it so much. I went out and bought the DVD just for the hell of it. Wow. I'm going on record. I like Ang Lee's Hulk from 2003.
I'm gonna piggyback off of you like a percentage. All right, so I did not hate Ang Lee's Hulk. I did not hate it. I enjoyed it, and I enjoyed it for certain reasons. I loved the military action scene. I thought that was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. And like you said, Lewis, I thought that with the CGI for its time, I mean, we're talking like 03. For its time, I thought it was pretty well done. I love, and this is my favorite. This is probably, and this is the real film nerd in me. The one thing that really kept me in tune with the film, and you might be shocked, is the actual film score by Danny Elfman.
Yeah, Danny Elfman did the score. Yeah.
Number one, he's my favorite composer of all time. And number two, honestly, that's what gets me into films. Is if you got a good score, I may just stick around and watch the rest of it. And that honestly is what heightened me liking it big time. Was the score, and the general CGI was not bad, and I didn't hate the story. I think it was, like you said, it was a little deep for its time for a superhero movie. I think Ang Lee was going for something real, like spiritual and kind of spiritual and science at the same time wise. Like, mm-hmm. I think he was going for something really strong with this that I think missed the mark with most fans because they don't give a damn about that. They just want to see give me some Hulk stuff, like just break something.
But
I think that's, for me, that's what really kept me into the score and some of the CGI action scenes for the most part.
That's a very interesting take. Yes, Danny Elfman, for those of you who are not familiar,
the man.
So he composed the score for Spider-Man the year prior, yes. And he also did the Tim Burton Batman movies.
Yep,
that iconic Batman.
It's all him, man.
Yeah, he even did the score for the animated series.
Yep, did it for the anime series. Yep.
Yeah. So, what did you think about the 2003 version of Hulk, D?
So, I mean, as far as, you know, as far as the film score goes, like, now that you put that out there, Kyote, I'm really, like, you know, rethinking it and remembering that, like, that score was, like, very captivating.
Yeah.
Like, that attention, especially with certain scenes and how it played out. I'll say this. The first time I seen it, I, like every other 14-year-old after seeing, you know, the first two X-Men movies and, you know, Spider-Man prior, I went in thinking, like, I want to see stuff being thrown around, tanks being destroyed, mm-hmm. just straight-up fight, everything. You know, I think Hulk, I think destruction, strength, like, monster, all of that stuff. So, you know, I didn't really appreciate it as much as I do now. It took me about maybe 3 or 4 more times to actually watching it where I appreciated the whole story.
Right.
Nick Nolte, he did amazing as the alcoholic dad.
Yeah,
like it was a lot of like good like pivotal scenes and gems that was like sewn within the film that I started to appreciate, you know, the second, the third time watching it. But you know, with the last, like you said, the third act of the film, I can do without that. Like they can cut that off. That's, to me, that's just like excess. But the rest of the film was good. The CGI was definitely good considering it was 2003. Like everything else was you know, I didn't hate it.
Right.
Like,
right.
I appreciate it more.
Yep. I totally agree.
And you know what? It's when the Incredible Hulk was announced, right? And I think everybody was under the impression that this was going to be a sequel, but then Marvel just came out the gate and said, no, this is actually a reboot where we're going to move forward with the Hulk character, but not in the sense where it's not going to have any type of connection to that previous film,
yeah.
Which I thought was interesting because it was only five years removed from that movie.
Yeah.
Right.
And yeah. And I was just like, okay, well, you know, I'm open to new directions.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if they obviously have a bigger plan in mind with the Avengers and all that stuff. So, you know, let's see how it goes. Now, the director that they hired was Louis Leterrier, and he knows a thing or two about action because he directed the Transporter films,
right.
That Jet Li movie Unleashed, the Clash of the Titans, well, eventually, the Clash of the Titans remake. He also did Now You See Me, mm-hmm. Which I think is very underrated. I really enjoy that movie.
That's a great
movie. Yeah. I mean, I haven't seen the sequel for Now You See Me, but the first one was very, very enjoyable. So, Louis Leterrier is somebody who, you know, he knows action. Those are all good action movies. So I was very interested to see what kind of take, because if anything, I'm pretty sure Marvel Studios, they sat in the writer's room and said, you know what, we're not going to make the same mistake that Ang Lee's film made, which is make it too psychological or too heady. People want to see Hulk just smash shit up. And that's exactly what we're going to give them. And I think they delivered on that promise. Am I wrong? Or?
No, I totally agree. I think they definitely delivered on that promise.
Absolutely.
I think just speaking about the director, Leterrier? I think you could see some of his style in The Incredible Hulk when he's in, I believe, he's in Brazil, or is it somewhere?
It's Brazil.
Brazil, mm-hmm. Right? Just the way he shot it, like the overhead shots. You know, you get this real type of action. You it steps away almost from a superhero movie and goes into like this this transporter-ish type of action scenes, and I think that makes that adds to the allure of what the action was like in The Incredible Hulk, and also adds to the, you know, obviously the storyline, and that he was definitely going for something different than Ang Lee. So I think he did a good job at that, definitely separating the two.
Absolutely. What I appreciated about this film right off the bat, especially now that I'm revisiting it, is the opening montage. It recaps how the experiment in the lab went wrong, and how he hurt Betty, and now General Ross is livid.
Yeah.
Because he almost killed his daughter. They basically told that whole story within that short 2-minute montage without rehashing so much of the origin story. Because it would have really pissed me off if we would have had to sit through another 35 to 40 minutes of an origin story.
Right.
Because I think that would have been pointless to me. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was very well done, you know, over the score and that opening montage, and then, you know, the clips of what's happening in the lab and how he escaped and this and that. So I thought that was cool. That was a good way to pretty much start the film.
Yep, I totally agree.
Now, Edward Norton being cast, I couldn't agree more with Quixote's point of that. All right, D, you're the first one.
Yeah,
I don't know how much I was able to speak before I got cut off, but I guess I'll rehash what I was saying about Edward Norton, how he was cast really well. I thought he did a fine job. He's a great actor in his own right. And I thought he added that layer of heart where you could feel empathetic for Bruce Banner that I thought was missing from Eric Banner when he did it in the first film. Like, I like Eric Banner as an actor, but I feel like Edward Norton was a much better Bruce Banner in this regard.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like, you know, you felt the emotion behind, you know, him or whatnot. Like, just the, you know, just the way how, you know, he was living life in Brazil. Like, it was, he really brought, like, you know, heart to, you know, the Bruce Banner character, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know what? The little touches in this film were very interesting, too, because I like how every time he's trying to come up with these techniques to control his temper, that little monitor flashes on the screen that says Days Without Incident.
Yeah, that's a good touch.
Yeah, that was cool. Because then that just goes to show you how much the character was struggling with trying to suppress his rage and coming up with breathing techniques and all that. And I like that little backstory where he is now basically a nomad. He's just traveling from place to place, trying to find his way and trying to get away from the U.S. military as far as possible.
Yep.
It's a hard situation that, you know, again, you didn't feel that kind of empathy from the first movie.
You know, I felt that's why I like this one so much, man. Is just because, like, stuff like little things like that type of detail within the film as far as telling the story, you know, like the Days Without an Incident, that type of, you know, that popping up here and there, the shots in Brazil and the overhead shots, and, you know, it felt like a almost like a fugitive type of movie, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like man on the run type of story. You know, he just happens to be the Hulk, and I just felt like it had a different feel to it, different vibe, and I think pretty much, man, everyone kind of hit their characters pretty well too. I mean, wasn't crazy about Liv Tyler as Betty Ross.
No, neither was I.
But you know,
Jennifer Connelly was better. Honestly,
yeah, I like Jennifer Connelly. I thought she was fine. But I mean, it's whatever she. She didn't kill it for me, but definitely, you know, style wise, it was, you know, I just like it. I definitely probably within my top 10 of the Marvel movies, probably.
Okay.
Yeah, probably. Yeah,
that's a fair argument.
Might be in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, D. Or if you were gonna.
No. Well. I mean, yeah, I appreciated, like, you know, the beginning half of the movie, you know, the, like you said, the Days Without an Incident, like, you know, it's small, it's minute, but it's effective. Like, it takes eyes to that, you know, you want to know how long, you know, because it starts off with 158 days, at one point it drops to zero, then it goes back to, like, 17, like, it keeps you engaged in the film. And yeah, just like, you know, the fact that, you know, he was basically living, you know, he was eluding the government, you know, because for years, you know, he's traveling to these countries, hiding out and stuff. And, you know, this high powered government, you would think that they'll be able to find him easily. But, you know, he's living life, you know, simple. He's living off the grid. You know, he has a dog in Brazil, you know, things like that. You know, it really painted how, you know, cool it was him just being a fugitive and just like outsmarting the government and just laying low.
Yeah, it definitely. Yeah. It had great feels to it. Like it did a really good job of making it more than just the Incredible Hulk film. Like it did a really good job at that.
Yeah, I didn't really see that until my third viewing of it. Mm-hmm. And what's cool is that they didn't wait very long to have Bruce Banner turn into the Hulk. It was like less than a half hour. I think it was like at the 25 minute mark or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, right out the gate, you knew that you at least were going to see more flashes of Hulk than in the previous movie. But this is going to lead into my next point about that kind of works against the film as much as it works for it. So this is a very concise movie. There's not that much character development.
And I feel like the film is not very concerned with character complexities outside of Bruce Banner. And even at that, he's somewhat underdeveloped because you kind of want to see more of his exploits. And a fugitive story becomes a love story slash father-daughter spite estranged relationship kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
And the film kind of ends on a, I don't want to say ambiguous note, but they leave it open as if there's going to be a sequel, but at the same time, there's no closure. And I just felt like the film was open-ended in that sense, where it kind of left me wanting more. And I think that was sort of a double-edged sword for the movie. A lot of people appreciated it, the fact that it was a very concise Hulk movie, and I'm sure other people felt that this film as a whole was underdeveloped. That was my initial reaction, that the film was extremely underdeveloped, as even though it was entertaining. But now I can accept it for what it is.
Right.
You know, it's just a concise, straight to the point Marvel film in this canon of movies. Mm-hmm. Well, what do you guys think?
After you, D, if you guys.
Hmm. Mm-hmm. All right, you take it. Okay. I'm still thinking about it.
You're absolutely right that they were not going for the whole set up the next movie type of plot. Like, they weren't going for that character development necessarily, I think. I guess my thought on it is this film was supposed to be different than all of them. Therefore, they weren't going to follow the formula of how each film pretty much was going at the time. And tell you the truth, I don't know if they even thought it was worth it, because there was a possibility they wouldn't even do another Hulk film. So why put so much into this film as far as setup, when there's a possibility, A, we're not going to do another Hulk film, and Hulk is going to be in all the other films anyway, so I don't think he may need another film. So maybe that was a thought process, I don't know. But that's a possibility, because, I mean, obviously we have not gotten another Hulk film, and this was, what, 08?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, and we probably won't, but I think that was the case, man. I think they just wanted to tell a cool story. Get it out there, if it links some of it to some of the MCU universe, but not necessarily make it all about the MCU universe. And I think that's what they kind of did with this. After watching it a few times, you could tell it's the one film that kind of, like you said, Lois, like it's the one film that's like it's the ugly little stepchild, like, sits in the corner kind of thing. You know, you center to the corner and you're like, all right, sit there and be quiet while everyone else is at the main table eating. You know, yeah, she has good qualities. You know, she can draw, she could dance and sing, but, you know, she kind of doesn't fit in with the rest of the family.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
that's a perfect analogy.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so it still did some justice as far as, you know, giving you something like a Hulk film, because everybody needed one after 03. Everyone was cramming for another one. But I think it did its duty with not, you know, it wasn't supposed to be anything more than that. You know what I'm saying? That's my thought.
It wasn't trying to do too much.
It wasn't trying to do too much, you know?
Yeah. Any thoughts, Steve?
Pretty much, yeah, you guys pretty much said, you know, everything that needed to be said. I mean, I feel like, you know, the director, like the whole team, they went in there with this film thinking, all right, we're going to do everything opposite that Ang Lee did in 2003. Like, you know, they wanted to give us something quick, you know, quick, full of action and concise. You know, and you know, their take on it probably was like, listen, if you're looking for, you know, heady psychological, you know, go back to our predecessor, the 2003 Ang Lee mm-hmm. cult. But what we're going to do is we're going to hit you hard and fast. We're going to hit you with some action. You know, we're going to slow down on the character development for the Hulk because, you know, again, if you want to know about his backstory in detail, go watch, you know, the 2003 film. And, yeah, I feel like as far as following, you know, the Marvel Universe formula, I felt like, you know, they wanted to be different. You know, we've been joking about the stepchild, you know, that doesn't quite fit in, but, you know, is awkward and kind of different in their own right. I feel like that's what they were going for. They was like, listen, we're not going to stick with that formula. We're going to deviate from it and do our own thing so we can kind of stand out on our own. It's up to, you know, the audience, which is us, to, you know, to think if it worked or not. But, yeah, I feel like that's what they wanted to, you know, that was the direction. Just give them a film with action, smashing, buildings destroyed, and, yeah, yep. That's it.
Yeah. And it's funny how – well, not funny, but interesting, very interesting, actually, especially on my third viewing, how – even though they're not trying that much to build within the MCU, you still have a lot of you still have a few references and Easter eggs. So like S.H.I.E.L.D. is name dropped, and you see S.H.I.E.L.D. on the monitor screens when they're like looking for weapons and stuff like that to track down the Hulk. Then an interesting scene where Tim Roth's character, Blonsky, is talking to General Ross, and General Ross is just asking him questions and giving him like a quasi history lesson on the super soldier serum. And like, he stops dead in his tracks and he's like, wait, how did you know about that? You know, and then like, as it turns out, after that original, I mean, they don't name drop Steve Rogers or Captain America, but if you're a comic book fan, you know, super soldier. Okay. You automatically associate that with Captain America. So apparently they've been trying to work on that formula, perfect that formula for the past number of decades in order to create even more superior soldiers. And I thought that was very interesting. But again, if you're not at the time, if you had no idea who Captain America was, you had no history or backdrop of it or any prior knowledge, then it that reference just completely went over your head. And then there's the I think that was it. Oh no, actually there's another Easter egg with the Stark Industries.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah. So you got S.H.I.E.L.D., Stark Industries, little Captain America reference. So the MCU, the very subtle references are there, but not enough to make you feel that this is part of the larger universe, especially in hindsight. Because in hindsight, you watch the film and you're like, okay, that might have just been fan service just for the sake of fan service, but nothing, it didn't really amount to much. Even that pre-post, this is how different The Incredible Hulk is. There's no mid-credit scene, there's no post-credit scene. It's actually a pre-credit scene. Like, When it says Days Without Incident, right? That last shot, Days Without Incident, zero. And his eyes, Edward Norton's eyes flash to green. You know, it blacks out. It fades to black. And then you get General Ross at the bar and then Tony Stark walks in. So technically, that scene is part of the movie.
Yeah.
Fucking weird, because that continuity makes absolutely zero sense. If you think about it, you go back to Iron Man, right? That post-credit scene, Tony Stark has no idea who Nick Fury is, but Nick Fury is like, you know, there's a world out there, and this is bigger than you, and I'm here to talk to you about the Avengers Initiative. And all of a sudden, he just walks into the bar, Tony Stark, that is confident, approaching General Ross, and he's like, I'm building a team together. And then you fast forward 2 years later to Iron Man 2, and Tony Stark has no clue about anything until Nick Fury is reintroduced in that film.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm like, that scene doesn't make a whole lot of sense in terms of the continuity and the timeline. I don't know, man. Maybe I'm just bugging.
Nah, you're definitely not. Like, you're definitely not bugging. Like, now that you, like, I noticed it, but, like, I didn't really acknowledge it. But now that you're bringing it to light as far as, you know, the continuity with that scene in Iron Man 2, because I watched Iron Man 2, like, about a week and a half ago. So, the way how he was confident walking into the bar and, like, you know, saying, oh, you know, I told you that that super soldier formula, it doesn't work or whatnot, and, you know, how he just said, oh, I'm building a team. Fast forward to Iron Man 2, that energy is not there. Like, he went from confident, like, knows everything that's going within, you know, the whole Avengers initiative, to kind of being, like, clueless about it, but still learning about what's going on as far as what they're trying to do and things like that. So, yeah. But there was one, like, little, you know, joke that, you know, in that scene that I found, like, hilarious with, you know, the whole Tony Stark and General Ross banter. You know, he said, oh, you know, you always wear such nice suits. And Tony Stark was, like, touché. Like, I found that pretty funny.
Yeah, and there was also that line about you have a drinking problem. I think he said something to that effect. Like, he's like, you have a problem. And he's like, oh, you're one to talk.
Yeah, that was nicely done.
Yeah,
that was weird.
Yeah, I think a possible theory, now that I'm really thinking about it, a possible theory could be that scene at the end of The Incredible Hulk chronologically probably takes place after Iron Man 2. Perhaps the events of The Incredible Hulk happen after Iron Man 2, or maybe after Thor, or is it one of those movies?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I'm like, why would they? I mean, I guess at the time, because they, you know, it was just fan service and they wanted to keep the MCU universe world building going. But when you think about it in hindsight, that's the only thing that would make sense, is that the events of The Incredible Hulk took place after Iron Man 2.
That would make sense. I mean,
it makes
sense. Yeah. Yeah, I agree, man. Totally agree.
Well, I think the biggest highlight, let me talk about that epic battle scene at the end where they're like literally destroying Harlem. I thought that was a very very good climax too. It's everything that you wanted in a Hulk movie.
Yeah,
you know, two monsters just going at it, and there's like no holds barred. Mm-hmm. No, they're not pulling punches. That was a very well choreographed scene. I mean, yes, it was CGI heavy, but it was a very well made, a well executed fight scene.
I totally agree, dude. That's like I said, that's one of my favorite scenes in the film. You know, even though I wasn't crazy about the Abomination, I thought Tim Roth was excellent.
Tim Roth was dope.
Yeah, he was dope. But the fight scene was everything it needed to be as far as what you would expect a Hulk battle scene with another monster would be like, you know, pure destruction. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, they didn't destroy Sylvia's soul food spot, so that was good. So they kept that, intact. They kept that intact.
That's funny because they also kept the African hair braiding place intact. I was cracking up because I'm like, holy shit! Yeah, like, man. This is Harlem.
Yeah, this is. Yep. And a lot. You know what I heard, man? When the movie came out and the scene, you know, everyone was going to see the film, and obviously the scene, everyone was watching the scene, you know, people were kind of feeling a certain type of way that they thought it was like almost a metaphor for what white America or white establishments thought of black populated areas. Like, they thought it was destroyed they thought it was destroyed anyway, so why not just do it in a film and all that stuff, like that sort of thing, like let's destroy Harlem because it's already bad, that sort of thing. Like, people were really going at it with this. Like,
you know what, I could see the justification behind that theory, but come on, even Yeah, I gotta admit, man, that's reaching.
That's reaching. No, I totally agree. That's totally reaching. Yeah, I didn't get it either, but people were going in on it for a little bit, man. They were really feeling a certain type of way.
That is too funny. Like, yep. Wow. Like I didn't even like put that together. Like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, you know what? Marvel Studios redeemed themselves 4 years later because the Avengers destroyed Midtown Manhattan. That's so true.
That's true.
For tat.
Yeah, man. That's true. You see, they were like, I guess, listen, we gotta take this to Midtown now. So let's get that so that people don't feel another type of way about what we did as far as destroying certain neighborhoods. So
yes, sir.
Yes, so I got cut off with the Tim Roth, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so Tim Roth, I thought, was the true highlight of the film.
Mm-hmm.
He was somewhat underdeveloped, but I think those were the intentions because he didn't really need to have full character development because he was just an adrenaline junkie at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So he's just looking for a fight. Wants to be put back in the battlefield. And what better way to do that than to have himself be the guinea pig for a super soldier experiment.
Right.
So, you know, even at one point in the film where he's trying to get the Hulk out of Bruce Banner and it won't happen because they were experimenting with his DNA and trying to find a cure. He's like, come on. I'm ready for round three, you know? And I thought Tim Roth was excellent in this role. Right? Yeah. He's usually excellent anyway. But he played that role perfectly.
Yeah, I thought he was solid too. Like I said before, man, he was probably one of the best parts of the film. Actually, one of the best parts of the film. I thought he was pretty well cast in the film. Pretty well cast.
Yeah. Any thoughts on Tim Roth, D'Angelo?
I thought he killed his role, man. He was dope. You know. Like, he really had me, you know, he really pulled me in or whatnot. You know, it was awesome to see, like, you know, he was so, like, you know, caught up with, like, yo, like, he was so competitive almost.
Yeah.
He would do anything just to get the, you know, an edge, get it in edgewise, you know, over the Hulk. So, you know, I like that facet about his character that, you know, it shows, like, his background. He probably was, like, you know, really, you know, ruthless back, you know, 10, 15 years ago or whatnot. And yeah, I liked how, you know, he associated his bouts with Hulk, with the Hulk as rounds. Like, mm-hmm. Just like, yo, round two, he had the super soldier serum pumped in him. So he was ready. He was really showing his moves and stuff. And then, you know, that epic, you know, big boot to the face, you know, broke him into pieces and into the tree. But yeah, he was just so, like, that was a dope scene. Like, he was like, so
he's like, that's all you got, and all you see is just, just mushing him in the face.
He broke every bone in his body, like, we can safely assume. But yeah, like, it was awesome, man. Like, you know, he was so, like, egomaniac, like, he was so power hungry that it's like, yeah, give me, you know, he just wanted to, like, beat him, and it was cool seeing that or whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely was cool. What else was cool was two cameos in this movie. I totally forgot that Lou Ferrigno had a cameo, the original.
Yeah,
he had a cameo in the 2003 movie as well. So I thought that was, I got a kick out of that. And then you had Stan Lee in a very extensive cameo when he goes to drink that beverage, but he is apparently poisoned because Bruce Banner's blood got onto it. And, you know, it obviously had some gamma radiation in it.
Yeah.
And that's how they ended up, I think it led to them tracking down the Hulk or something to that extent.
Oh. Yeah, I think I remember that. I think that might have been one of his most extended, man.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's a pretty long cameo.
Yeah.
That and the fact that it happened, like, really early in the film. Like, usually it's like he pops up, like, towards the middle, you know, latter half of the movie, maybe towards the end, his cameo pops up. But it was just like they threw it at you like right in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you see, the Incredible Hulk is an anomaly in more ways than one.
Yeah.
Again, the ugly stepchild.
Listen, man, I thought that was pretty accurate for what I was saying.
Yeah, it was. You ought to put that in writing.
Yeah, I should. Definitely should.
Now, let's talk about the box office performance, because there's got to be something to this. So the original Hulk film from 2003 grossed like in the ballpark of $62 million opening weekend. And it was considered not a major flop, but not big enough to justify a sequel or justify calling it a blockbuster hit. You know, it didn't make as much money as any of the X-Men films or even the Blade films, for that matter. Now, you go to The Incredible Hulk, this version, it only grossed $55 million opening weekend. Now, we say only, $55 million is that's a lot for a regular film. But when you're talking about a Hulk film, you know, I guess it's a modest amount.
Yeah.
And oddly enough, it didn't make back its budget domestically, but it did so worldwide, because it had a budget of $150 million. Mm-hmm. And the North American total for this movie was only $134
million. Wow.
But worldwide, it was able to gross $263 million. So movies usually do end up making back their budget on in terms of domestic, global returns and world international returns. So this movie, again, just like the 2003 film, not.
Yes, sir.
All right, Anchor's pissing me off. What was the last thing I said?
You were on. Oh man, I think you just conked out on me.
Did I get to mention the amount of money that the Incredible Hulk made?
You were on money worldwide. Money. Yeah. And okay. I was just about to chime in too. So yeah, you had just finished talking about what it made worldwide and what it made domestically. That was the last few things I heard.
Okay, so it made back its budget internationally, which most films do, mm-hmm. but I think Marvel Studios and Universal just threw their hands up in the air and said, this wasn't really the hit that it should have been, especially considering it didn't make back its budget domestically. Mm-hmm. So we're going to continue with the MCU, but we're not going to greenlight any sequels.
Right.
Now, with that said, here's my thing. I think the Hulk is, this is my opinion, the Hulk is too much of a multi-layered, complex character that a feature film doesn't justify a comic book adaptation for him.
Mm.
I think he needs a TV series platform.
Interesting.
I've always said that about the Hulk and the Punisher. Those are two characters that need very fleshed out story arcs to progress over the course of, you know, 8 to 10 to 13 episodes in a television series. Mm-hmm. I think that's the perfect platform for the Hulk. I just, you know, general audiences like Hulk and they're aware of Hulk, but not enough for them to flock to the theaters, apparently. Well, at least for his own movie.
Yeah. You know, that's a very interesting take on it, Lewis. I never thought about that. But now that you said that, I can absolutely see how those characters, especially the Hulk, how he would benefit from having a show.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think, like you said, he needs to be fleshed out. I mean, there's a lot of layers behind this guy and behind the character. And just putting him in film after film after film, or making a sequel, or possibly would have made a sequel, probably wouldn't have done the film any justice. But if you see what Netflix is doing and what ABC is doing by putting out these, you know, shows about, you know, like The Punisher and Daredevil
and all this stuff, right? And how at the end of the day, it's just it's broadening the universe, and it's also allowing people to, it's always allowing the story to be fleshed out more, and it benefits the character once they're on the big screen. It benefits it. So I never thought about that, but I love the idea of there possibly being the need of a show. You know what I'm saying? I think it does need that. Now that you mentioned that.
Yeah, and I think ABC was trying to get that off the ground after Disney had acquired Marvel. Because when Iron Man and the Incredible Hulk hold the distinction of being the only Marvel Studios films to be distributed by other studios. Because the Iron Man was distributed by Paramount, and then this movie was distributed by Universal. Mm-hmm. Then when Disney acquired Marvel in 2009, that's when, from that point forward, Marvel Studios became its own entity because they were owned by Disney. So Iron Man 2 forward, it was just straight Marvel Studios. So I think around that time, I remember reading some rumors that ABC was trying to get something going for a Hulk series in development. But I don't know. I don't know why it fell through. Maybe it could have been budget issues because, you know, you don't want the CGI to look that cheap, especially as the Hulk.
Right. Now, so, is it true that not true, but is it Fox that still owns Universal that owns Hulk, or is it Fox that owns them? And that's because I heard the major reason why we're not seeing a lot of we didn't see a lot of Hulk films is because Marvel doesn't flat out own them anymore. They don't own the Hulk anymore.
I don't know how true that is.
I believe I want to say Universal owns them.
That would make sense because Universal was the studio that distributed those two movies. But I think Marvel Studios has the rights to Hulk, or Disney, I should say. But I don't think that they're interested in having, even with Mark Ruffalo taking on the reins of Bruce Banner and that character. I don't even think they want to do a solo Hulk movie. Mm. They figured, why not just include Hulk in the Avengers movies, put him in a Thor movie, and call it a day? Mm. You know, because the irony is that Thor Ragnarok benefited from Hulk's appearance and his role in that film. Like, both parties benefited. The Hulk as a character benefited, and Thor as the franchise, because it reinvigorated those films.
Yeah, that's true.
So I personally could care less for a Hulk movie, even if it is Mark Ruffalo. They should, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Just have him as the MVP of the Avengers. Have him be the guy that is destroying shit and wrecking stuff whenever the Avengers need somebody to do that.
Yeah.
I think that role is perfectly fine for him.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that would be perfect for him. But would I like to see another movie? Of course. I gotta see it. I would love to see another standalone Hulk film. I would love to see that. But it, with Mark Ruffalo, because I think do you think Mark Ruffalo needs to be in a standalone film? Would you like to see that? Like going back, you know, going back to like 2008, you know, after Edward Norton leaves the franchise, do you think it would have been necessary to put Mark Ruffalo now in? If you were the studio, would you say let's do a standalone film now with Mark Ruffalo, or would you say let's leave it alone and just have him in other Marvel films?
You know, that's a good question. D, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay, no, because I sent you another I sent you another link, another invite. I'm thinking that you got disconnected.
No, I'm here.
You know, that's interesting because I'm sure all the Edward Norton marks wanted to see him return, and they were disappointed when he didn't because he had that falling out with Marvel. again, this goes back to Marvel Studios' history of not always getting along with certain people, you know, whether they're directors or actors or screenwriters. Edward Norton just happened to be one of those people. He wasn't interested. He loved the character, and he was interested in reprising his role, but he didn't want to do it in an Avengers movie. Like, he wanted to actually get paid for another Hulk film. And I think that was the issue. But they were fortunate enough to find Mark Ruffalo, because Mark Ruffalo, and it's crazy because he hasn't had a standalone film, is arguably the best iteration of Bruce Banner slash Hulk.
I agree.
Like, and they've done such a great job with the visual effects that every time he turns into the, like, that Hulk literally looks like Mark Ruffalo, like a green Mark Ruffalo.
Yeah.
Like, it's amazing. Yeah, I feel like, obviously, it's motion capture, but, like, they made him look exactly like the actor.
Yeah. I feel like, you know, with that in particular, I feel like they pretty much went back to their roots in the sense that, you know, from the Incredible Hulk series, because it was Lou Ferrigno basically painted green with a wig on. So I feel like they took from that and it was just like, yo, let's just make him look like Mark Ruffalo as much as possible to further, like, have people really convinced that, like, this is the Hulk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's amazing because the Hulk in the Incredible Hulk movie looks nothing like Edward Norton.
No.
And the Hulk in the 2003 version looks nothing like Eric Bana. No. But this one, you see him in the Avengers movies and you know, so on and so forth. And it's just amazing. Like, that shit's spot on. Mm-hmm. But yeah. So to go back to your original question, I could do without a Hulk movie. Like, I'm not losing sleep over whether or not they're going to have a standalone Mark Ruffalo movie. It would be cool to see, but is there enough interest or story? You know what? Let me retract that question. There's always going to be interest because Marvel Studios is just a behemoth these days. So I feel like people would just flock to the theater just because it's Marvel, you know?
Yeah.
I told you. But hey, he had a standalone movie. It was called Thor Ragnarok.
Yep.
that's the most standalone film that you're going to get from Mark Ruffalo.
Damn, you're right. Yeah. Yeah. That was pretty that's pretty accurate. I mean, next to Thor, he was the guy in the film. So I mean, yeah.
Yeah, they might as well have named it Thor Hulk Ragnarok because it was his whole damn movie.
I mean that's pretty much what you get. Like, and Hulk was all over the marketing for that film,
right?
So it's not like it was just a 5-minute cameo. Like, you knew that he was gonna actually be in the film, a big starring role, which I thought was cool, you know.
Yeah, like as far as, like, with, you know, me, like, on that question, I feel like I'm not fiending to see another Hulk film, but I feel like it can work in this climate because, again, you know, Marvel is such a behemoth. They can put, like, anything. They could put webisodes out and, you know, people are going to flock to it. So I feel like it can, you know, it has its own staying and lasting power to do a solo film. But it's not something that, like, you know, I'm sitting here on, you know, Hulk message boards, you know, typing, like, we need another Hulk film stat. Like, it's something, you know, it's something that I can live without. But I can see them, if they wanted to, like, you know, because right now they can do no wrong. So if they wanted to, I could see them, you know, in the boardroom just all sitting there like, you know what, let's put Mark Ruffalo in his own solo film. And, you know, let's see how it works.
And like you just said, D, I wouldn't be surprised if that was something they actually thought about because, like you said, they can do no wrong. I mean, come on, man. Like, really, they could do it if they wanted to. And it would make money. Yeah. So it would even be that one of those things where they possibly lose money. But another question. I feel like the Hulk is one of those characters that he's either hit or miss with the crowd. Like, Yeah. Some people love him. Some people just kind of don't care about it. Is it? I guess would people think that it's might not be necessary because he's not the character is not big enough of a star character to be in a standalone movie at this point with all the MCUs that are out, like all the movies that are out now. Like, I think it would benefit, but maybe some people just feel like, you know what, it might not be something we even need to do, tell you the truth. Like, I don't know.
I think there's too much of a divide between Hulk and Bruce Banner. Mm. And what I mean by that is, yeah, you care for Bruce Banner and you feel empathetic towards him because he's living with this monster and this demon inside of him. But at the same time, you snap out of it and you're like, I don't give a shit. Like, I want to see you turn into the Hulk.
Yeah.
You know, like, I want to see the big green monster. So there's too much of a conflict with the general viewer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you either want to see Hulk. Like, let's just put it this way. I feel like it's very hard to balance both in one movie. Which goes back to my original point. Like, I think a TV series would be perfect because you wouldn't have to see the green monster in every episode. You know, and it'll be far better balanced than a 2-hour film,
right?
You know, because you don't really know what you want to see, and that's why I think a Hulk standalone film is tricky because. Unless he's backed by somebody like Thor or a more notable name like Captain America or somebody like that, it's difficult to strike that to make it resonate with the general audiences. Like it'll just be modest box office numbers. You're not gonna get no 90 to 100 million opening weekend. Like I
Yo.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're not going to see a Hulk film gross 90 to 100 million or any earth-shattering box office numbers. It's just I don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, man. Like, cuz all right, at this point, you know, Hulk, you know, he's the MVP in, like, you know, in the Avengers movies. You know, in Thor Ragnarok, he took on the, you know, pretty much he took on the comedic role or whatnot. So, you know, MVP slash, you know, comedian. So it's like, it would be hard to, like, really give him a film just based on how they've been, you know, showing the Hulk over the last few years in these, you know, Marvel films. Like, I don't know if people really, I feel like people, you know, just want to see him smash, see a couple jokes or whatnot here and there, and that's it. Like, I don't feel like they wouldn't sit for a 2-hour film, you know, just based on him, no matter how, you know, great the script probably could be.
Now, here's my thing, though. Do you think a Planet Hulk movie would work? Because that's obviously a big storyline in, you know, in the Hulk comics, and there's been an animated movie of Planet Hulk, but I'm wondering, because I guess that's kind of like where they were going with Ragnarok, but
yeah,
like, I don't know. Do you think a Planet Hulk movie would work?
I think it's a strong possibility. You know, let's see, based off of you know, the first Guardians of the Galaxy, like. You know, I don't know about you, Lewis, personally, but I didn't know what to expect. You know, I wasn't familiar with them. I never read the comics books dealing with Guardians of the Galaxy. All I knew was, you know, it's a couple of guys traveling through space on a ship, you know, going to different planets and things like that. So I didn't know what to expect going in. After seeing it, I was like, I was sold. I was completely on board. I was, you know, team Guardians of the Galaxy. So if they just take some elements from that film and the way how successful it was, it probably can work. and whatnot, especially, you know, even with Thor Ragnarok, because, you know, it's dealing with space, you know, time, you know, space, traveling to, you know, another planet at light speed and stuff like that. So it probably can work or whatnot. But just like, again, the script has to be well done. You know, characters might have to throw a character in there, you know, one or two characters in there. But it's a possibility. Anything is possible. Yeah.
Yeah, Keyote, my question was, do you think a Planet Hulk movie would work? Since there was already an animated film and it's a big story arc in the comics.
I'm not too familiar with the Planet Hulk movie.
I'm not overly familiar with it. I've seen the animated movie, but I was just curious to get your thoughts.
I think, listen, at this point, I think anything would help. I mean, you could do anything. Listen, Marvel can do anything they want to basically improve or to shed light on particular storylines. So doing a Planet Hulk, anything, would get the fanboys and out and, you know, in support of these type of movies and shows and films, and two, it would just, if you're going to continue making these type of films, it would just help the overall story of each character and introduce something new that most people might want to see from reading comics and watching the cartoon and so on. So I don't think it would hurt. I mean, even if not many people watched, at least they did it. You know, at least they say they did it and they did extend the storyline somewhat. But I honestly think it wouldn't hurt at all. Why not?
Quick piggyback off of Kyoto. I mean, if, all right, let's, you know, as far as introducing like another character, let's, you know, it can work. Like, say, for instance, if they threw in like, had play her.
About She-Hulk. Yeah.
Or like, if they go with like the comic book, you know, the comic book route, and like, you know, I'm not really familiar how he came about, but you know, Hulk versus Red Hulk or something like that. It could work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. I'm thinking of Infinity War, and I can't wait to see Hulk have a showdown with Thanos. That should be badass.
Mm. Yeah, that. Listen, man, you got your tickets already, right, Lewis?
Oh yeah, man.
Listen, you.
You know, barring my babysitting situation doesn't work out on that day, or God forbid something else happens, I'll be there.
You'll be. What are you looking forward to, man? From this film, like, what do you? Like, we've all seen pretty much all the Marvel movies. Like, what is your absolute expectation? Like, I don't want you to walk. Listen, we are at the point where we are no longer walking into these movie theaters with no expectations. Not anymore, right?
Of course.
So I'm walking in there with a very high expectation. But I want to know from you fellas, like, what is your absolute expectation? What do you want to see as a fan, knowing the comics, the cartoons, the movies? Like, what do you have to see to be absolutely satisfied with this film?
That's a good question. Listen, expectations are a little too high because Thanos haunts my dreams. So I'm too enamored by this. Like, this is just like too exciting for me. But I'm okay. For me to be fully satisfied, I need to see a well-balanced film with all the characters getting their moments of shine and screen time. Mm-hmm. I'd like to see some nice witty banter, which, by the way, James Gunn actually worked on the Guardians of the Galaxy dialogue scenes for Infinity War. So that's a nice little trivia. So you'll see like his touches on that. But I want to see everything well balanced. I don't want to see, but I want to see someone die. I need to see casualties. And the reason why is because, come on, man, this is a fucking epic battle.
I gotta see casualties.
Yeah, I gotta see at least one major casualty. I want to leave the theater fucking crying. I'm telling you, man.
So you want all your emotions to be exposed in this film? Like, you want to feel anger, hate, sadness? Like,
yes, I want to feel like a child, man. Okay, like, that's fair this enough, is man. The stakes. If yeah. this is building up to a culmination, right? This is the stakes are supposed to be at an all-time high. So why wouldn't you kill off a character or two? Like, if I walk out the movie theater and the Avengers are still unscathed, despite the fact that Thanos walked out, despite the fact that he has the Infinity Stones, I'll feel somewhat disappointed, even if the film was really good. Because it's like, okay, I get it. You know, there is the second part next year. But what? I'm just expecting an all-out war, you know, like the film, the title suggests. But at the same time, I don't want it to be just action, 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 action. Like, I want to see Thanos' backstory, because obviously he's not doing it for no rhyme or reason. You know, and I read the Infinity Gauntlet comic book, the original one, years ago. You know, there's obviously, like, he's a very, I guess you could say psychological, but he's a very profound. That's the word I'm looking for. He's a very profound being.
Okay.
He's a very profound character. And I'm hoping that they explore that more. Because, you know, Gamora's is his daughter. The other chick from the Guardians of the Galaxy is his other daughter. Mm-hmm. What the hell's her name? Nebula. There you go. So, you know, I'm expecting, like, a lot of emotional heft.
Okay.
For lack of a better term, yeah, but that's you know, I'll shut up there.
All right, no. How about you, D?
Yeah, honestly, like Lewis, he pretty much he took every possible emotion or reaction that I film. So I too read the Infinity Gauntlet comic, you know, courtesy of Lewis. I borrowed it from him and read it. So when I see, you know, this Infinity War trailer, when I think Infinity War, I'm really thinking, like, I'm hoping that a lot of, you know, the story, how it was sewn together, I'm hoping that they took a few pages out of the Infinity Gauntlet comic, because the comic was awesome. Like, it was great. It showed, you know, so many different, the psychological, you know, back of story of, like, Thanos, like, showing that there was a method to his madness and all that. So I'm expecting, like, I'm really expecting to see, like, a few scenes that remind me of the comic book. And, yeah, as far as a lot of character interaction as well, like, weird character interaction.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Anchor is just, ugh.
Anchor either hates the Incredible Hulk, or just really, really hates us tonight, Lewis. It's one of the, it's
yeah. This is ridiculous tonight. We've had
it's one of them.
A lot of cutoffs tonight.
I don't know what's happening. I don't know if we're working on DSL or anything right now, or just dial up. I don't know what's happening.
We are
getting destroyed tonight. I don't know what's happening.
Yeah, I don't know either, man. But yeah, Infinity War. One thing I'm also expecting is for the fanboys to not be assholes and spoil everything online.
you know,
as recently as a couple of days ago, Joe and Anthony Russo, the directors, they already went on record and said that the reason why they haven't revealed the title for Avengers 4 is because it's a direct spoiler of the events that happened at the end of Infinity War. So that's why, as of right now, it's just still tentatively titled Avengers 4. And then they posted a letter asking fans to not spoil anything, at least until, I guess, the first trailer for the next Avengers comes out. Yeah, I mean, apparently, however this shit ends, it has huge implications on the next one.
So
interesting.
Do you think there will be high amounts of casualties?
You know what? I don't think there's going to be high amounts, but I do think that at least one major character is going to get killed off.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a situation where like three or four of them are going to die, because I think that would just be overkill. But I'm expecting at least one, maybe two, but at the very least one major character.
Okay.
Like if they killed Falcon, like that's not going to really have the emotional impact that it's supposed to, even though, you know, I like Falcon, I like Anthony Mackie, blah, blah, blah. But like if they killed somebody like Iron Man or Captain America, then now you're talking, you know?
Yeah. That's heavy.
You know everybody is going to come out the theater like really feeling it. Yeah. Like, holy shit, this was no joke.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I see.
My biggest fear for the film, honestly, is a poor reception. My biggest fear is that I wake up one day and Rotten Tomatoes has a score of like 48%.
Oof.
That would break my heart.
That, you know what, Lewis? I'm not going to lie, man. That's probably my biggest fear, dude, is that before I see the movie, and I usually do this with every film, like I go on Rotten Tomatoes.
I read all these
review sites, you know. No spoilers. I just want to hear what the people are saying. Right?
Yeah, I just want to see the reaction.
I want to see if the popcorn is spilled over or if it's not, you know what I'm saying? Like I want to know. So I look on it, and my worst fear for Black Panther was that I would go on and it got like a 50%.
Yeah.
Then you're like, oh shit, this is not good.
I know. That's the most disappointing feeling, especially when you had your hopes up high.
Yeah.
And you're already excited for the movie.
Like,
Lewis, there's nothing more deflating than that.
Dude, you know what? I'm not gonna lie. What would be very disappointing for this Avengers film would be in the 70s.
That would be disappointing too.
Yes, even if it got anything in the 70s, that's not good. That's not good for this film. I mean, not with the star power, the story, what's happening in this film. There's no way this could be in the 70s. It has to be 80s and above, man. It has to be, or you're looking at a possible. You know, you're looking at a possible, you're looking at a possible Justice League-ish type of film, man. And I don't want to even say that. I don't want to say that.
But bees are better, bro. Bees are better.
Bees are better, man. You cannot get in the 70s. That's my biggest fear for this. You cannot.
Yeah, I'm going to say that if it scores anything lower than an 85%, then that's not good.
That's not good.
Especially considering the stakes in this film.
Yeah, that's not good. Yeah. That's what I'm afraid of.
That's you know what? Done with anger. This is going to be my last point, and we're wrapping it up. But yeah, what the hell was I saying? Oh yeah. So James Gunn, I guess I got cut off like shortly after mentioning his name.
Hey, Coyote got cut off.
Say that again.
So it looks like Coyote got cut off.
Yeah, I think he got cut off.
Yeah.
So let me resend him the link. So what I was saying before was that James Gunn, director of the Guardians of the Galaxy films, he tweeted his reaction to the film because I see an early screen of the finished product, and he said something to the effect, "Oh, this is the worst movie that Marvel has ever put out." But he said that jokingly, obviously, because then he followed up with a tweet saying that. Not in these words, but he was saying how it was like, holy shit, like it was amazing, and this, that, and the third. And in my mind, I'm thinking, yeah, sure, he's probably putting it over because, you know, he's working for Marvel. But I don't think if he felt that strongly about the film, if he didn't feel that strongly about the film, he could have just kept his mouth shut. Like, if he really was reserved about it or he had mixed feelings about it, he could have just, like, not tweeted anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, I mean, so I don't...
I have high hopes.
I'm same here, man. Like, I have super high hopes. You know, we've been shooting the gym with these Marvel films for the past 10 years. Like, we're expecting, like, you know, I'm expecting, you know, basically, you know, perfection or close to it at least. Like, you know, 85% or better. You know, we got to see, like, you know, we got to see great reactions all across. You know, we got to, everything has to be, you know, on point. You know, like, there can't be no mess ups, no hiccups. Like, you've essentially been working towards this goal for 10 years. Like, you got to come correct.
Yeah.
Like, simple as that.
All right, well, I don't think Keyote is going to be able to Oh, there you go.
Yes, sir.
Keyote, I was just about to give you the boo. I'm like, oh, I don't think he's going to be able to reconnect.
Yes, sir.
So, in a nutshell, you didn't hear my last point about James Gunn. No. I mentioned that recently he was able to see the film, and he tweeted out, saying, not in these words, but he was saying how the film sucked and that it was the worst thing that Marvel's ever put out.
Whoa. Which film are we you talking Infinity?
Yeah, Infinity War.
Nah, that's not good, man. That's not good.
No, here's the thing, though. He said it jokingly.
Oh.
Because he followed up with a tweet saying, no, in all seriousness, like, holy shit, like, you know, something to that effect. Like, this is like, incredible. Like, I'm speechless. Like, that, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay.
If he didn't feel that strongly about the movie, he could have just kept his mouth shut and not tweeted anything. So the fact that he felt compelled to actually, you know, tweet something out, like, I mean, yes, he works for Marvel Studios. I get it. He's putting them over. But if he felt like kind of mixed about the final product, he could have just said nothing.
Yeah, that's true.
Because he gets paid for promotion and shit like that, but it's not like they're gonna pay him any more to say that the film is amazing.
Yeah, I agree.
So
I agree.
Yeah, it's a good sign though if he feels that strongly about it.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed, man. I'm thinking this could be epic. This could be epic if it's done right. If hopefully it was done right. Who directed this?
Joe and Anthony Russo, who also directed Winter Soldier and Civil War.
Oh, okay. That's a good sign. Okay.
Yeah. Winter Soldier, Marvel just basically entrusted those two. And they were like, you guys clearly know what you're doing. And you know how to balance characters. We're giving you the two Infinity War movies.
I like it. That's a very, very good sign.
They
do a great job, like you said, as far as balancing characters and giving characters proper screen time where you don't feel like you got cheated.
Yeah.
They did that well with the introduction of Black Panther. They did that, you know, that, so that I'm a little happy about that now. It should be pretty good, man. I'm looking forward to it. I mean, It can't be bad. Like, it can't. Well, it could, but it just can't. You got to do a lot.
I get what you're saying. It could be.
It just can't be. It just can't
one be. Of many clusterfuck ways as far as characterization is concerned. But I think it's going to be good.
Yeah, I agree too, my friend. I agree.
I hope. So yeah, it'll be great.
Yeah, so any final thoughts on The Incredible Hulk, or we pretty much hit every point?
I think we nailed it, man. I mean, final thoughts on Incredible Hulk. I thought it was a decent film. Definitely didn't hate it. I definitely didn't hate the original Hulk. I mean, I kind of liked it too. I liked Incredible Hulk just a little better. I thought it was a film that still is necessary. but not at the same time. But it did its duty. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, I'm pretty. Yeah, that's what I gotta say about that one. I mean, it's in my top 10, definitely. It's in my top 10.
Yeah, pretty much. It's in my. Well, I don't know. I have to go back and rewatch all the films, but I probably would put it in my top 10 as of right now, at the top of my head.
Yep.
It's an enjoyable entry in the MCU.
Yes. Yes, it is.
So entry number 3 will be the all time classic Iron Man 2.
Mm. Oh boy!
I started watching it yesterday, and yeah, I gotta finish it. Yeah, I know it's ridiculous. I'm watching movies in segments.
You
like I'm watching it as if they were episodes. So yeah. I saw episode 1 last night.
Hey man, you gotta get through it somehow, man. You gotta get through it somehow.
Yeah, so hopefully you guys can rejoin me for that one.
Yes, sir. And listen, Lewis, getting off on a major, major tangent, man. Major tangent. That's what we kind of do. We can't go without just some quick thoughts on Mania, my friend. We just can't go without mentioning Mania this weekend.
Yeah, I mentioned Mania briefly, on my intro. Nothing. I didn't get into match specifics or whatnot. But yeah. You know what? We're gonna have to table that discussion for a future episode before the weekend.
Yes, we have to. We gotta.
For sure.
Yeah, we gotta talk about that.
Or if not, then we can just go right into it next Monday, because we'll have tons to talk about next Monday. Post WrestleMania, post Takeover, post Raw, after Mania.
Sounds good to me, man.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll definitely link up for that.
Yep.
But anyway, thank you guys so much for coming on and bearing with Anchor with all the, well, you know.
DSL all day, man.
DSL.
Yeah, man.
All right, well, you guys take care of yourselves.
Thank you, guys.
Kyote, we'll link up with WrestleMania and all that good stuff talk.
Yes, sir. Fellas, have a good night. Great combo. Great combo.
Great combo.
Great time. Have a good night, fellas.
All right, later.
Peace, man.
Peace.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.